But I do want to explain the difference between credit and a loan. So the biggest difference is that with a credit line, the bank is providing you an amount of money that you can use at your will. If you have a credit limit of $3,000, you can use all of it, some of it, or none of it. A loan, in this case, is for a very specific purchase.
Correct.
You're borrowing a lump sum of money all at once with a promise to pay it back over time. Either way, whether it is a credit line or a loan, you have to pay it back. And if you don't, there is a consequence. Mm-hmm. These people are not your friends. So a lot of times, because of the flashy marketing, you'll hear people who use these services say it's technically free because
technically.
It feels that way. It's not technically free, but it feels that way because instead of paying $480 for a Gucci belt at one time, you're making 24 payments of $20 a piece, and you get to have your belt even though you're not done paying for it. So I can understand why it feels free. But that psychology of it's technically free is a really slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does it cause you to spend, like I said, 3.5 times more than what you intended, it actually encourages you to ignore the potential costs. You need to be aware of the hidden costs associated with missing a payment. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. In today's episode, we are continuing the conversation about debt as we dive a little deeper, and we're going to talk about buy now, pay later apps.
Yes. So buy now, pay later apps are like a newer type of lending.
Yeah.
And if you're not an online shopper, you may not have heard of these because they're typically only digitally represented. That I like look at them kind of like you look at the progression between CDs to MP3s.
Yeah.
There's not like a physical plastic credit card, or at least not yet. But you also may have seen them in some of your favorite big box retail stores.
Yeah.
I think the closest thing that I can compare it to is kind of like layaway.
Yeah.
You remember layaway?
I do remember layaway. Yeah, I'm an 80s baby. you know, so I definitely remember layaway. I was trying to think about my own experience with layaway. And
I'm pretty
sure, like, you know, I was too young to really remember, but I'm pretty sure there were at least two things that we had to put on layaway. One was the couch. You know, typically like the more expensive things, right?
Yeah.
I remember we had to put the couch on layaway. You know, because a couch is like something that, you know, it's supposed to last you a lifetime. You know, it's expensive.
Yeah.
So you got to like break those payments out a little bit. But I think the second thing that I remember was the washing machine, because that was like pretty expensive as well. And it was like a really major appliance. And it was something that we would, you know, I remember going to Sears. I'm pretty sure it was Sears. And we were like, just put a little something down, put a little something down. But even that, I don't know, I would say is similar. Buy now, pay later. It's like, it's more insidious.
Well, it's a newer, cooler version.
It is, and it's more immediate.
You get it now.
Like, yeah, it's scary.
Yeah, so I'll back the bus up a little bit because I don't know how many young listeners we have, but for those who...
I don't think we have a lot, but...
I feel like I meet some occasionally.
Okay.
But for those who don't know, before there were credit cards, there was this solution called layaway that allowed customers to pay a little bit at a time for items at stores. And then eventually you could take it home when it was fully paid for.
Yeah.
So they would like set aside your item in the back.
Correct.
And you would come in and make payments against it.
Well, I don't know that they would actually set it aside because, again, I'm going back in my own memories and I'm pretty sure I remember seeing like there was like a little book, right? So you would sign up to be a part of the layaway plan.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna, but it's not like opening up like a credit account. You would sign up and say, yes, I want to put this on layaway. And you're basically, it's almost like the retailer, the store person, almost becomes like a lender in a sense where you would go and you would give them a little bit of money. And so for us, I remember very specifically every single time we would go to run an errand or something like that, if we just happen to have a little bit, you just go ahead, put some down and put something. It was almost like a, it's like a piggy bank. Yeah. So they become your piggy bank a little bit until you reach a certain point. I don't know all the details. It was either until you paid for it or you paid enough of it or something right. like that. And then you would sort of hit that mile marker and then you can actually have the thing. But this is like pre-digital era.
Yeah.
So like there were booklets and you would have your
There's
name.
Somebody who's listening who did not know this was a thing.
I'm sure. Yeah. This was back. Yeah. I'm literally envisioning it. There was like a big old book.
Yeah, and big
there
was, red book.
I think there was carbon copies back then. And so you would get your carbon copy, like the yellow sheet, and they would keep the white one, and there'd probably be the pink one that goes in the file.
Carbon
something.
Copy. You might have to explain that. And no, I'm just playing.
It's like a three-layered paper thing. And then we just lost all our younger.
Yeah. So anyway, buy now, pay later is kind of an evolution of that with a few distinct differences, namely that you can have access to the item immediately.
Yep.
So if you were to finance your purchase through a buy now, pay later company like Affirm, Klarna, or Afterpay, it allows you to instantly get an interest-free or low-interest loan at the point of sale.
God bless America.
Right. Right. So again, if you're an online shopper, you've likely seen a prompt at checkout that instead of paying, you know, $300 for whatever item, you can split it into four payments. And you as the customer benefit because you get to purchase this higher cost item or lower cost item, whatever, mm-hmm. without necessarily having cash on hand. And the retailer benefits because it helps them with revenue and gives you a reason to come back.
Yep.
Right. Reports have shown that buy now, pay later increases the cart size by as much as 3.5 times. So if you were planning to spend $20, you actually end up spending closer to $70 because at that time, of the $70, you only got to pay a fourth of it.
Yeah.
Which is bananas.
This is the world we live in.
So you end up spending the same $20, but you still owe money, you know, afterwards.
Yeah. What I think is really interesting to me is that like you get it right now.
Yeah.
Right? Which, you know, you could think is not that different from, it's like a slight pivot from what happens right now in terms of credit cards, but it's really, really interesting. So this technology has been around for about 8 years. So it's 2022 now. It's been around for about 8 years. And the early adopters were driven by the desire to avoid credit card debt, right? Mm-hmm. This is like a different form of that. And so the earliest users were already struggling with credit cards. And they were looking for an alternative that was convenient and flexible. And we've right. spoken about some of the challenges with the U.S. credit scoring system and how difficult it is to get credit when you don't already have credit, consistent income, or like a history of using credit. So these buy now, pay later apps, which I already know I'm going to stumble over that a couple times.
A lot of times they call them BNPL.
BNPL, which is not any easier to roll off the tongue. Yeah. But these buy now, pay later apps, they saw an opening to give people who traditionally wouldn't have access to credit, like students or immigrants, stay-at-home parents. It gave them a chance to finance the items that they really wanted. And again, it's instant. So signing up is really, really simple and seamless. It usually doesn't even require a credit check. And although they start with lower limits, you can gradually increase it over time if you're responsible with your account.
Right.
Now, the other thing to note, and we see this mostly with startups, that they're willing to operate at a loss and offer really lucrative incentives to build up that initial user base. We've seen right. this a lot in like tech companies that quite honestly are funded like billionaires and VCs. They understand the first couple of years that these companies are going to operate at a loss, but they're doing that to just entice people in.
Yeah. Which
there's a part of my brain that can't really help but to make a drug reference here, because I'm pretty sure this is how drug dealers act. It's like, here's a little sample, here's a little taste.
Costco is a fine metaphor.
Just to keep them coming back, and then they raise the price, and they become kingpins. Yeah, but all of this came tumbling down. Well, not tumbling down, but like almost like it went into overdrive with TikTok.
Oh, yes.
Like TikTok took buy now, pay later to the next level.
Yeah. To your point, it started with this group, this cohort of people who were trying to avoid credit card debt. But mm-hmm. I think buy now, pay later hit the mainstream more recently because of two trends. One is just the increase in online shopping because of COVID. But two, because of TikTok, because of the number of times it's been positioned as a financial hack by well-meaning TikTokers who are being told that this service isn't credit, technically it's a loan. It's a form of credit.
It is a form of credit, yeah, for sure.
And so fixed payments are debited from their bank account, and they were told there was no interest or late fees, going back to those incentives that you mentioned to get them enticed. Mind you, all of this was happening as student loan repayments were paused and people were generally spending more time on their phones. And it was before all of this economic downturn, if that's what you want to call it, whatever you're calling this period of record inflation, wars, stock market declines, crypto crashes. And so now that they've got this habit of not paying for items, even though they receive them, people are currently cash strapped.
Yeah.
And they're having a hard time finding the cash to make the payments that they still owe on the things that they got, you know, a couple months ago. Things like Pelotons, MacBooks, again, things that you normally would not be able to afford, but can now because of this financing function.
Yeah. And going back to TikTok, I think the other thing about this is because, like, not only was TikTok promoting these types of things, but they were also at the same, and I'm not talking about the platform itself, but like the people who use the platform and have large bases, but they were also promoting the idea of like cryptocurrency at the same time and like investing in the stock market.
It's a lot
the
of fast
time.
Money.
So if you're a novice investor or just someone who's new to managing your money, you're younger, Gen Z, for example, this makes perfect sense to you. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I don't have to spend all of the money that I actually have to get the things that I want. I could just spend a little bit of the money and then I can invest some of this money and buy some of these things that's actually going to grow at a higher pace. And then I can buy more stuff. And then the cycle just repeats itself until eventually you end up running out of money. I bet our listeners can tell kind of where this is going and kind of how our sentiment on this thing is. But like it is, it's interesting, obviously, from a financial and a technological standpoint. And even from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah, it's super innovative. It's just the way really that it's positioned scary. To young and vulnerable, you know, consumers can lead to dangerous, like, side effects.
And I'm willing to bet that it's also going to creep into the lives of older people as well. Pretty much anyone
we're gonna get into that
is cash strapped. So a couple of stats. Let's go ahead just to give our listeners a bit of a overview of just how expansive this marketplace or technology or buy now, pay later world is. And so last year in 2021, Americans spent more than $20 billion through these BNPL apps. In 2022, that number is expected to be closer to $80 billion. Ooh. And by 2024, 2 years from now, that number is expected to grow to $120 billion. And they anticipated roughly accounting for about 10% of all online transactions. So you can understand why the billionaire class, why the venture capitalists of the world,
the advertisers, very bullish, the retailers.
There's an ethical dilemma brewing inside of me right now as I'm thinking about this. Couple of other stats. In California, the great state of California, 91% of consumer loans, which is defined as loans for personal, family, or household purposes, such as car, utility, or medical loans, that were made in 2020 were buy now, pay later loans, right? So 91% of consumer loans were buy now, pay later loans in the state of California, which
is where these companies originated. So it's not surprising because most of these are Silicon Valley companies. And so obviously they spread locally and had a bigger impact in California. But again, the loan itself is not inherently bad. The way that it's marketed is challenging.
I'm going to say it's bad all around, but we can get back to that.
Yeah, let's debate.
A couple other stats here. So Gen Z, all right, God bless Gen Z. They had the highest penetration of any age group. So more than 40% of them will have used this type of financing by the end of the year, and they're spending 925% more through these services than they did in January 2020. So it's very clear where they are targeting, who they're targeting, and even geographically where we're seeing really, really huge clusters. Obviously, we didn't get into some of the other states, but you know, California clearly at 91% of consumer loans being BNPL loans, that is an incredibly high number. But like you said, these companies, I don't want to call them struggling, but like
they're not profitable
right now, right now, right? So Klarna, for example, one of the larger companies, more popular companies, they claimed a $700 million loss last year, and 65% of it was from defaults, people who just flat out couldn't pay what they actually owed. Their competitor, Affirm, lost the same amount of money, and its marketing expenses tripled to $427 million. So in essence, in order to be profitable, these companies are betting on customers who are already overextended, making their payments while continuing to use the services to rack up even more debt.
Yeah, that's there's obviously a lot of hope here,
but I don't know that that sounds that different from the massive trillion-dollar, multi-trillion-dollar student loan debt environment that we're living in right now, or the mortgage environment that we're living in right now. So I'm going to try my best, y'all, because this is like really wild to me. I'm going to get back and focus on BNPL. But yeah, these numbers are crazy to me.
Okay, so the first point we want to make is just around language. And this is marketing 101. And it's kind of splitting hairs, but it's technically correct when people say this is not a credit line. Mm-hmm. It's technically a loan, more specifically a point of sale loan. So you can call them point of sale loans if that's easier than BNPL. But I do want to explain the difference between credit and a loan. So the biggest difference is that with a credit line, the bank is providing you an amount of money that you can use at your will. If you have a credit limit of $3,000, you can use all of it, some of it, or none of it. A loan in this case is for a very specific purchase.
Correct.
You're borrowing a lump sum of money all at once with a promise to pay it back over time. Either way, whether it is a credit line or a loan, you have to pay it back. And if you don't, there is a consequence. Mm-hmm. These people are not your friends. So a lot of times, because of the flashy marketing, you'll hear people who use these services say it's technically free because it feels that way. It's not technically free, but it feels that way because instead of paying $480 for a Gucci belt at one time, you're making 24 payments of $20 a piece, and you get to have your belt even though you're not done paying for it. So I can understand why it feels free. But that psychology of it's technically free is a really slippery slope. Mm-hmm. Not only does it cause you to spend, like I said, 3.5 times more than what you intended, it actually encourages you to ignore the potential costs. You need to be aware of the hidden costs associated with missing a payment. Mm-hmm. Just because they're not charging you interest doesn't mean you won't pay any fees or penalties. So for example, with Afterpay, payments have to be made every 2 weeks. Now, if you miss an installment, you pay a $10 late fee plus an additional $7 if you don't bring your account current after 7 days. Now, I guess the semi-good news is that they cap the late fees at 25% of the original amount, but there are still fees involved if you miss a payment.
Well, first of all, 25% is incredibly high, right? Yeah. If you're comparing that to a credit card, like that is incredibly high. I think the highest, like I knew that rates got that high, but I think the highest I remember having even back in my day with my very first credit card, shout out to Discover, was like 17.9%. So like that was still really high. But like, so to know that there are options here that are just so easy to get and, you know, it's capped at 25% is like, that's crazy
talk. Question mark.
That's crazy talk. I think the other, I wouldn't call it beef, but issue that I have with some of these companies is just the way that they position it. Like it's positioned like, it's almost like a little service or like a little
budgeting tool.
Like a budgeting tool.
Yeah.
Just something. No, it's we're here to help.
I'm helpful.
Keep your money. Hold on to your money.
Yeah, you need that.
You need that to do some of the things that are really important in your life. We're offering this as not even an incentive. It's almost to your point, like here's a tool.
Yeah, right? A tool.
It's like it's not
exactly
a budgeting tool. Like this is a tool that is designed to extract more money from me predictably over a long period of time. So like we mentioned earlier, each of these companies operate a little differently, and there's no dashboard that consolidates like a full view of what you owe and what the terms for each of those loans are. So if you're shopping on one site that uses Afterpay, which doesn't charge interest, but another site that uses Affirm, which can charge up to 30%, you have no idea how much you actually are on the hook for. You're just kind of bouncing around buying things and using different services.
Correct.
Just like when you see some companies allow you to pay with PayPal lifestyle, and some offer you to pay with Apple Pay or something like that. You'll see these as options. And I would imagine some of the people who are shopping online are imagining like, oh, that's what that is. Mm-hmm. I don't have that card. Well, it's not a card, right? It's the service that Gen Z and apparently 91% of California is using like crazy. These are also... There are also differences in how these loans are reported to credit bureaus and what impact they have on your credit history. So while several of them report any unpaid loans to collections, very few of them are reporting the good repayment history. So if you are a Gen Z, or if you're someone who's taking advantage of these loans, you might be under the impression that so long as you're paying these things, that it is adding to your credit worthiness in some way. It is having a positive impact on your credit score or your credit history. And that may not actually be the case. And so I think this is especially damaging for Gen Z, because given that's their target demographic and these that generation has so much time on their hand, like, it's really important to have a good credit score. And it's really important to have a really strong credit history. So you want to be mindful of, like, how much or how often or whether or not you're using those things at all. And oh, by the way, these companies are not regulated the same way that lenders are, right? So it just gets worse, right? If you can remember when Uber started, right, and they were operating without taxi medallions and all the taxi companies were like really upset about it, the same thing is happening here. These credit card companies and even like payday lenders, like, you know, the government's pretty hard on them, right? They require them to provide transparent information about their interest rates and the total cost of their loans and all these things that you end up seeing on the last page of the monthly statement, which is why your credit card statement is like 10 pages long. These buy now, pay later loans are not, they don't have to do that because they're not technically, you know, lenders or I'm sorry, credit card agencies. But they're also required to provide consumers a way to dispute fraud.
Credit card companies are required.
Credit card companies are, right? But buy now, pay later lenders are exempt from these laws. So they'll say that they comply with the laws, but if something went down, a federal agency technically couldn't actually enforce anything.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because without regulations, this kind of debt can leave people who are already financially insecure more vulnerable. And as we watch them acquire new customers through partnerships with retailers like Target and Walmart, who, by the way, replaced their layaway program entirely in favor of Affirm a couple of years ago, it really just expands into new territory beyond just the impulse purchase online and into the everyday purchases. So in fact, Klarna, which is another company, they partnered with Chevron and Texaco to launch a Fill Up Now, Pay Later program where you can buy gas in installments. And then Afterpay commissioned a survey that suggested that customers actually wanted them to expand into typical use cases like dental work, car repairs, and rent. So there's this demand, there's this massive customer loyalty from the people who have gotten a chance to use these that's spilling into everyday purchases that could be, again, a slippery slope if you don't recognize that this is a loan and they will come collect.
It's probably a little too late for this disclaimer, but at the end of the day, I'm not a journalist, so I don't have to like abide by journalistic standards. This is our platform. We have a point of view. I'm clearly like, I don't want to say anti, but like not bullish or like a huge fan of these kinds of things. But I just want to say, like, this is not something like if you use these kinds of products or if you know people who use these kinds of financial products, I think that's what I want to call them. It's a financial product. That's a very general term. Like, this isn't something to be ashamed by. Like, at the end of the day, like, it's actually quite helpful. If you don't have other alternatives or if you're cash strapped, like, these types of services are actually really, really helpful. And I'll say that we are very and have been very bullish on fintech. And obviously, this is another version of that. So I don't want to say that I'm anti buy now, pay later, but I will say the functionality, the way that it's marketed and all of those things, I think kind of conflict with what we know to be true around the types of habits and money management practices that we know end up benefiting people in the long run. The benefits of this type of tech and having instant access to short-term point of sale loans could be a good thing to fight against things like food insecurity and help combat the paycheck to paycheck cycle. Like, you know, and we're huge fans of other fintech companies that are doing those kinds of things. But without the right consumer knowledge and the advocacy, these services have the potential to become like really predatory, just like their predecessors. Mm-hmm. And that's why we wanted to speak about it today. You know, I think even Apple, come to think of it.
Yeah, they just announced that they're getting into it.
Yeah, like it's become so prevalent that even Apple now, which again, so now you're adding this additional layer of it being instant on your phone, mm-hmm. like wherever you are. Like it doesn't have to even be like a physical point of sale. It could be at any point while you are online and just trying to buy something. This is an option that is available to you. And Apple is now making it easier for people to do that.
Yeah. I mean, as a responsible credit user, I am not anti at all on this. I do not like the way that it's positioned to drive consumerism and impulse purchases. Yeah. I don't like how they target Gen Z, who is very vulnerable and inexperienced in financing. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I am going to try to give them the benefit of the doubt and recognize that this could solve a lot of problems, right, in society. So there are a couple of takeaways that we want to leave you with before we close. The first is that you need to understand the payment terms, yeah. right? We talked about this earlier, but don't assume that all of these companies operate the same way. Some have fees, some don't, some send debt to collections, others won't. Like as you bounce around from e-commerce site to retailer to gas stations, just know which one you're dealing with so that you can manage that in your head to know what might be the consequences if your income is disrupted or you're not able to make a payment.
Yeah.
And the second thing, and this is a big one for people like me who return things often, is to read the return policy. Not just for the product that you're purchasing, but also for the buy now, pay later service that you're using. I've seen a few stories where people returned an item to the merchant, but then still had to continue paying the loan until that return was processed through their buy now, pay later app.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So make sure you're looking at the loan terms and documents and know how all of that works. Same thing happens, going back to your point about fraud, the same thing goes if you order something and don't receive it.
Yeah.
You probably need to reach out to both the merchant and the buy now, pay later service to get it settled, because those two companies aren't necessarily talking to each other across every department.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like we mentioned earlier, like these apps are, like they are perfectly designed to get you to overspend.
Yes.
Right? Like they just
that's the unfortunate
they
part.
They are just well-crafted, you know, debt making machines, right? Yeah. Like just constantly pushing you to hold on to more of your cash, but not so that you can actually do more things, so that you can actually
spend
buy more
with them.
Spend more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything from like the instant access to the loan, to the placement of the ads for the service at mm-hmm. the point of sale. It's like all of this is meant to catch you in the most vulnerable position. They are super seamless, like I said. And if you're not careful, you can rack up some really, really huge amounts of debt that would be in a addition to your credit card limits. It might be helpful to come up with some rules or like boundaries for yourself. Like maybe you're going to tell yourself that you're only going to consider it if the purchase is over like $500, or, you know, you're not going to have more than two of these kinds of loans at once. Like whatever works to keep this in check, I think is probably worthwhile exploring. Because once you agree to the payment installments, like it's immediately debited from your account. If you mess around and forget that you bought something extra, and instead of $40 coming out, it's now $75, that could really throw off your budget and put you in a really, really vicious cycle of like constantly needing more credit or other sources of income just to kind of maintain your quality of life and to pay all your bills. So
yeah.
It's to me, it just adds like another layer of complication that my brain is yeah. just not even wired for. So we have these conversations all the time around how much more complicated it is for this generation
yeah.
than it was from when we were their age. So I kind of empathize, and hopefully I'm adding some context here for those who've never heard of these kinds of services, because I feel like as it continues to grow, it's going to just impact other generations, other groups and cohorts. And so it's something that everyone needs to be mindful of.
Yeah, if you have young people in your life, please explain how these services work. Mm-hmm. Because to your point, it's really easy to lose track. You can think that you only have $300 that you owe Afterpay, and it's really closer to like $2,100 because you right. forgot that you put your flight on there, and right. you forgot that you put concert tickets on there. So the last thing I'll add is just to have a plan for missed income. So again, these are loans, y'all, and the times are uncertain. So you want to have a plan just in case your income is reduced or eliminated while you're still making payments. Ensure that whatever company you're using has the ability to make repayment arrangements, and then try to research that process in advance. Typically, you can do that by just Googling the company name plus missed payments,
yeah,
or the company name plus repayment arrangement. You can also just search user-generated content on Twitter, Facebook, and ironically, TikTok to learn from others' experiences on what happens if you lose your job and then can't make, you know, these subsequent payments.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've made a lot of points. Do you have a final thought?
Yeah, I am going to double down and say that I think these apps and services are here to stay, and that could be a good thing if used responsibly. The leading companies already have tremendous brand loyalty, so bigger companies with even more brand loyalty like Apple can start offering the same service. And I can really see how buy now, pay later becomes the new way that Americans describe and experience debt, which, to your point, is scary. Because when acquiring debt becomes more seamless and natural than paying with actual money, it can lead to even more drastic consequences. Like, if the incentives are there to use this service as opposed to using the cash that you have on hand, it could be a house of cards. Yeah. So, yeah, my final thought is similar to my final takeaway. Regardless of how you spend it, these are still loans and need to be managed as such.
Yeah, I'm going to go with my gut here and say we don't have a lot of Gen Z listeners. So I'm speaking more so to millennials and boomers who are actually listening to our podcast. And I would say, talk to your kids. Don't be fooled by the fact that they don't have credit cards, or if they're showing you credit card statements.
If you've ever wondered how they afford something.
Oh, they're so responsible.
Likely these apps.
There are about five people that I'm thinking about in my mind right now who will probably think, oh, my daughter, my son is so responsible. They don't have any credit card debt. They've got a great credit score. Doesn't mean they don't have
a ton of debt. Yeah.
So it's something to be mindful of. If you're wondering how they're able to get all these nice and shiny things, you might want to dig a little bit deeper, and it could be that they have fallen down the rabbit hole of buy now, pay later. Again, I agree with you. I think it is here to stay because it does serve a purpose. There is a market for it, but I see it the same way that I did subprime lending. This is the gift of wisdom, right? There are people who could not qualify or don't qualify for traditional mortgage or traditional mortgage rates. Doesn't mean that there aren't some companies out there who are willing to assume greater risk and don't have to abide by some of the same rules that the traditional finance companies have to abide by. And I think this is the kind of world where that plays. And so it's certainly something to be mindful of. At the end of the day, it's still debt, regardless of the category or the name or the label that you want to put it in. It's still debt. And it has the ability to grow at a far faster pace than most people can actually earn money on their own or in the stock market. And so it can have devastating effects if you don't manage it well. So that's what buy now, pay later is. And good luck.
Well, on that note, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you like what you heard, we are rolling out a listen now, rate later. Please head over to the ratings and reviews page and leave us a 5-star rating and review. We'll see y'all next week.